Welcome, everyone, to today's Fireside Chat. This is number 388 for CH Networks, for a project here at the University of Ottawa. Our topic today is bringing health considerations into the transportation planning process. Today is April the 24th, 2014. And I will introduce Kim Parada from Healthy Canada by Design.
Hi folks, I'm the Knowledge Translation and Communications Lead with Healthy Canada by Design. I work for the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and Heart and Stroke is the lead agency in the coalition, that's the Healthy Canada by Design, and we are funded by the Canadian Partnership Against Cancer under the Coalition's Linking Action and Science for Prevention program, and we are in kind of our fifth year of operating under that funding arrangement. On the next page, slide 5, just to give a sense of who is involved with Healthy Canada by Design, and each of the partners that are involved with Healthy Canada by Design, each of them have a commitment to do a project and get some sort of funding to participate in our project. And right now we have 5 national organizations, we have 11 health authorities from 7 different provinces, and we have several academic institutions that are working with us on projects, and 2 non-governmental organizations, and they're all listed there on slide 5. On slide 6, just very briefly, the vision of Healthy Canada by Design was to get health officials, planners, engineers, and NGOs, and academics across the country to collaborate in working towards building built environments that are designed to promote and foster health and well-being, thus contributing to the reduction of risk factors for chronic disease. Under this round of funding with Healthy Canada by Design, we are taking a particular focus on active transportation. And our 2 speakers today on slide 7 are Megan Winters, who's an assistant professor with the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University. She is an epidemiologist interested in the link between health, transportation, and city design. And she will be discussing one of the projects that was undertaken with the second round of funding for Healthy Canada by Design. And Audrey Smargiassi has a PhD in environmental sciences. She's an associate professor at the School of Public Health at the University of Montreal. She's a spokesperson for a team of researchers and practitioners from Montreal Public Health, the University of Montreal, and McGill University, and she'll be presenting on a second project that has been partially funded under Healthy Canada by Design. And it's over to Megan.
Thanks, all. I'm really pleased we have such a good audience joining today from across the country. I'm speaking about a project I completed last year with the help of Erna Van Balen, and it was funded through CLASP and this Healthy Canada by Design project. So I'll go through some of the presentations or some of the findings from the report we released last summer. And the report identifies sources of transportation and health data that can be used to further integrate health into transportation planning. And so while there's details on how these sources can be accessed in the BC context, I think this work is really relevant for practitioners across the nation in that we came up with recommendations for action using a tiered approach, one which allows municipalities to identify next steps that are most appropriate for their needs moving forward, and also a number of promising practices, some of which I will highlight for you today. Slide 9, just a brief outline. What I'll be doing today is provide the context, so why we were motivated to do this work. I'll talk about what we learned in terms of the types of active transportation data that are collected and what the needs are. I'll go over these recommendations we came up with and the framework, and I highlight a few promising practices as well. So slide 10. Of course, the links between transportation and health are diverse and interconnected, and whether the motivations and interests in these links, they vary between sectors, locations, and stakeholders. So some people are interested in climate change, air and noise pollution, cardiovascular disease, sustainability, congestion, whatever it is your motivation, there is widespread interest in making these links and moving this integration forward. So the project that we undertook, the need for it really arose during the first phase of the Healthy Canada by Design project, when many agencies across the country described challenges in implementing healthy community design policies due to lack of meaningful data to inform decision making. So there is data being collected on indicators that could inform decision making and assist in communicating to local stakeholders, but the data is often taking place within specific agencies and sectors and may not be well known or readily available for use by other sectors. And then in addition, we also heard that existing data were not always clearly communicated to policymakers, decision makers, and to the public. So to address these gaps, our goals were to document data collection efforts in the Lower Mainland across various sectors, to document the data needs, so not only what they have, but what do they wish they had, to identify promising practices where possible from other Canadian centers for data collection and presentation, and to come up with synergies, opportunities for coordination, and recommended actions. So on slide 12, to go about this, we did this project in the Lower Mainland of BC, and we conducted interviews with municipalities, regional governments, health authorities, and regional transit authorities. In the municipalities, we typically spoke to transportation planners or engineers, and these were either done in person over the phone with a semi-structured interview format. And Erna Van Balen did most of the work on this. So in these interviews, we asked municipalities what they collected, specifically prompting for things about walking, cycling, public transit, infrastructure, crashes, air quality, and also what they felt they were missing. So the project had an engaged advisory committee. I noticed John Carsley's on the phone, and he was one of the members of that advisory committee. And this group was crucial in guiding the project to identify key contacts and individuals and promising practices. So based on the interview data and discussions with the advisory committee, we identified a series of recommendations, and we linked this to promising practices related to transportation and health data collection, sharing, and analysis. So that we came up with based on the themes identified and discussions within the advisory group. To slide 13. So what did we learn? In the interviews, we heard about the diversity in municipal practice in terms of data collection. So most municipalities collect some kind of data on traffic counts, but not all of these include active transportation. So only one-third of the municipalities had formal programs for active transportation counts, but instead most of the municipalities did counts on a project basis, so whether they may have put in some infrastructure or crosswalk or done an upgrade or where there were complaints or concerns from local residents. So many municipalities did this for pedestrians, and often when we're doing pedestrian counts, they also had collected data such as age groups and sex. In cycling, manual and automated counts were frequently done on a project basis, but we rarely had demographic data. So most municipalities in the Lower Mainland for doing something in this regard, but not a formal program in most cases. The other type of data that came up very important was crash and injury data, so items related to safety. There's further details in the report for those working locally on the specific data sources that were mentioned, but I'll just give you a quick summary of the types of data available here, and they may also be available in your provinces. So ICBC, the Insurance Corporation of BC, is the motor vehicle insurance provider for BC, and they have a database on all crashes that involve motor vehicles where claims are made. So this data typically has geographic locations, and it is reported out to most municipalities at regular intervals, so their data. In BC, the BC Injury Research and Prevention Unit, sorry, there's a typo there, also holds injury data. So they've developed an injury data online data tool, which compiles data from vital statistics, from the Ministry of Health through the Discharge Abstract Database, and ICBC. So this is a comprehensive set, fairly comprehensive set of injury data, but it's one that hasn't typically been used by municipalities to date. So there is potential to be accessed this data at different geographies. The health authorities have injury and crash data to varying degrees through their hospitals and emergency departments, or a selection of them in the trauma registry data. So they collect this data for their injury surveillance and monitoring, and to some degree it's coded for transportation-related codes, but doesn't always have geocoded locations of where that crash might have happened instead. So none of these injury or data sources is comprehensive. It wouldn't have all of the data for crashes and injuries, but there's a number of different sources, some of which are frequently used by municipalities and other of which are not. So a number of other data types came up that are used by municipalities or available from other groups we interviewed. So travel behavior data typically comes from the Regional Origin Destination Survey, which takes place every 4 to 5 years in the fall. And this is typically provides both share, origin, and destination, and they do a survey of 2% of the population. But some municipalities do pay TransLink to oversample so that they have data at smaller geographies. So trip diary data are an important source of information for most municipalities, but some did indicate that they don't have the resources to analyze the data fully. There is public transit use data available, some. So TransLink and BC Transit have automatic passenger counters on part of their bus fleet or SkyTrains. And the motor vehicle counts are available through the Ministry of Transportation and Infrastructure that collects along major roads and highways. While I'm not monitoring the questions, I will tell you there is a report available online, and the link to it will be at the end of this presentation, and is also on the Healthy Community by Design list. Anyway, I'll stop reading that. So in terms of air quality, Metro Vancouver, I noticed, is also on the phone. So Metro Vancouver operates 26 air quality monitoring stations throughout the region, and they produce annual reports that are used to track progress on air quality goals and trends over the years. And then when we look further into other health outcomes that might be of interest to municipalities and health authorities, there's a number of national data sources which could be used. So the CCHS, the Canadian Community Health Survey, collects data on about 130,000 Canadians per cycle. And the data is meant to be available and representative at a health authority level. But in some places where oversampling has been done or in certain data cases can be used at smaller levels of geography. Of course, sample size is always the challenge in these kinds of studies. And for this reason, Vancouver Coastal Health, in partnership, this reason and others, Vancouver Coastal Health and Fraser Health with UBC initiated a local health survey called My Health, My Community. The logo's down here at the bottom. And they're just wrapping up now. So their aim was to recruit 12,000 people in the survey. And the survey includes a number of built environment and active transportation indicators. So this is going to be a really useful source of health-related data going forward, and also has data on active transportation in it. We asked not only about the data they had, but the data they need, and this came up across all of the interviews. So I'll just highlight a few of the key themes here. There's more detail in the report. So the municipalities and health authorities spoke to their wish for having better data on transportation, as well as more capacity. So this might be data about non-commute trips or counts along recreational trails, things that are not well represented in the existing surveys, as well as more capacity to both collect and analyze data at more sites or over more time periods. They spoke to having better access and sharing of the data. So this is in regards to having the regional travel surveys, to having more data sharing between health and municipalities, and for that to be more seamless, to have one location where data is stored regionally so that municipalities can access it as compared to it being held in different places. They highlighted the need for best practices, so to make data collection practices standardized across the cities and potentially across the country, because of course the trips don't end at the city boundary. And they also wanted to ask similar questions on surveys, so what should that metric be so that we can have comparisons across locations and across time points. They wanted better data on safety, so there was an interest in crashes and injuries that do not involve motor vehicles or would not have been claimed. So going beyond that ICBC data, and also further details on severity. Some wanted better data on infrastructure. So there are municipalities that have excellent inventories of where their sidewalks are, where their bike routes are, but others don't have this capacity. Another thing that was raised was about parkland supply and use, and so this isn't typically tracked. People just aren't collecting this type of data. But it serves to make the case at times for whether you need more parking or less parking. Finally, a lot of discussion on what we're talking about here today, so furthering methods to link health and transportation, which metrics should we be using, and how do you go about cost-to-benefit analysis? So those are the data needs that were raised in the interviews that we talked about, and I'm interested in doing a quick poll, which I think Dot is going to help me with here, to see how these resonate with what your gaps are in terms of data you wish you had. So I think what happens here is if you want to click on as many as you want that are a problem for you. The goal of this project was to generate action, not just documentation. And so based on the themes that emerged in the interviews and discussions with the advisory committee, we came up with four general sort of region-wide recommendations, so big overview recommendations. First, that there should be a regional approach to data collection. So one option would be to establish a regional count day, and I'll speak to this about the National Count Day program in the U.S. that I'll mention as a promising practice. So if we had a regional approach, that would enable comparable data across the region and potentially across the nation, and it would provide insight into traffic patterns that span municipal boundaries. The My Health, My Community survey that I mentioned is an important source of health data to allow these kinds of comparisons. So it was done across this entire region, and so we can do comparisons where we need to between municipalities, and that will be repeated going forward is my understanding, so over time as well. Related to that, the second recommendation is to establish a regional holder for the data, for example, a website or a clearinghouse that could archive regional counts as well as other relevant data, so giving quick access to crashes, health survey data, summary statistics. In the report, we mentioned the Peel region as an example of a data repository. This is a project that also had some funding through CLASP, where the Peel Data Center serves to link people to diverse sources of data. Third, municipalities expressed a need for more funding and resources to carry out comprehensive transportation monitoring. So that gets to what you guys said, just more data. So the above two recommendations would help with this, and in some instances, counting equipment might be able to be shared across municipalities when we're doing it, when it's not automated or installed counting equipment. Available funding and resources could be leveraged across the region, such as has been done with the My Health, My Community initiative, where different health authorities are working together. And this perhaps could also be done across between the health and the transportation sectors. Finally, fourth, municipalities can certainly do more to share their knowledge and know-how through existing committees. So within our region, there was great diversity in terms of capacity and skill in terms of data collection. And so there are a number of existing committees where this could be on an agenda item. So the Major Road Transportation Advisory Committee at TransLink or the Bicycle Working Group in order to further align data collection efforts. So moving on to slide 19. So what we did learn in this is that certainly there was a great degree of diversity across the municipalities. So the municipalities had different levels of interest and capacity to integrating health into transportation planning. And so we also developed a set of tiered recommendations. And this slide depicts the framework that resulted from our work. And it shows three tiers to describe a range of situations. So note that this framework should be viewed along a continuum. There's no strict separation between the tiers, and the hope is that municipalities will place themselves somewhere along this continuum, and in doing that, it'll facilitate them identifying recommendations and promising practices that might be most relevant to where they are. So I'll discuss these three tiers on the next slides. We're going to look at tier one first. So these are municipalities that collect only limited transportation data, but they do have an interest in collecting better data on active transportation, although they might not be doing it right now. The recommendation for these types of municipalities is to initiate active transportation counts, and that these might be able to happen in conjunction with the motorized vehicle counts that they're doing already. Municipalities that are at this initial stage would benefit from having like a National Count Day program, promising practice, that would assist them with their standardized data collection. So interestingly, I know Sue Shukazi is on the phone from Halliburton. I presented this at a rural health research conference that we both attended and did a workshop on this project, and virtually all of the municipalities that were attending said that they fell into tier one. Okay, so a lot of the more rural and remote communities are certainly in this situation, and they just need some guidance on how to move forward. So I'll speak to the National Count Day program in the next slide. Tier 2 municipalities are those that collect some active transportation data, and they're interested in standardizing their data collection and doing some linkage to health outcomes, perhaps the injury data to get started or safety data. The recommendations here are to extend or align active transportation programs and tap into readily existing available crash data. So the report serves to highlight a number of existing sources of health and injury data that might get them started. And this group might also benefit from promising practices such as the National Count Day, a regional data center like the Peel Data Center, and the interactive crash maps that I'll show later. So most of the municipalities that we interviewed were somewhere within this tier two, so before or after. If we go to slide 3. So this is Tier 3. These are municipalities that typically have a lot of active transportation data and have capacity to analyze them. So they've got a good understanding about how transportation impacts health and are very familiar with injury and crash data. But what they're asking for is moving forward linking to health, so other health indicators. How do they get there? So the City of Vancouver is at Tier 3, and some of the other municipalities in Metro Vancouver are certainly approaching this level. The recommendations for these groups are to connect more deeply with health authorities or research agencies, such as the BC Injury and Research Prevention Unit, to work to add health questions into the transportation surveys that they're doing, so whether that's advocating at the regional level or incorporating it into their own panel surveys that they're doing. And also to link up with the local health surveys, so the My Health, My Community. There's also a recommendation that they start with health impact assessments, such as we'll be hearing about later, or using the HEAT tool, which I'll mention in the next couple of slides. And finally, these kinds of municipalities might be ready to look to other kinds of data, so crowdsourcing data, using apps. There's one called CycleTrax that's out right now that's being used by a lot of health authorities and municipalities. So creative approaches to get different types of data. So the next sort of interactive question for you guys is I'm interested in, across the people participating in the call, where you think your municipality best fits on this continuum. As I said, we've highlighted 3 tiers, but there's lots of space in between those. And that's really what we've heard, is that we wanted to come up with recommendations that fit across the spectrum, that were suitable for all of those groups. And so something to help the people who are just getting started, as well as providing some kind of, you know, what's state of the art and what's coming down the pipeline. But when we talk about knowledge translation, really hoping that the when you're in a particular region, that people or municipalities who might be at Tier 3 can really help out to those Tier 1 and Tier 2 groups as well. So just to identify 3 promising practices on the next slide. This is one I've mentioned a couple of times. It's probably most relevant to those at Tier 1 and Tier 2, so people in that kind of spectrum. I just want to remind you, the promising practices I'm showing here, I'm just doing 3. There's more in the report. They're not selected based on specific quality criteria, but intended to fill the kinds of gaps that were identified in the interviews and to serve as an inspiration. So this one is the U.S.-based National Bicycle and Pedestrian Project, and it can be a great start for these kinds of municipalities. The project aims to provide a consistent model of data collection, and so what it's done is it's set an annual count week in the second week of September. So they have set days every year and recommend that you pick a weekday and a weekend. And what they provide is a standardized protocol for doing data collections. They give you the forms, they provide you with training materials, and they'll even create you a report you can see if you upload the data to them. So program is meant to be offer a count protocol that can be done either by staff or by volunteers, public citizens, or advocacy groups. And so in that way, it's really helpful for those who might have limited capacity in terms of doing data collection. You can also see they've picked a number of different weeks throughout the year if you're interested in doing seasonal variation in addition to that one annual count day. So this is a great low barrier way for a municipality to get started, and it's a program that's well used across the United States, so automatically you'd have comparisons for your data set. And the link is available here if you want to know more. So if we look at the next slide, slide 25, Promising Practices, Tier 2. So one of the things that came up in interviews and in the advisory committee was the power of maps to convey messages to decision makers and stakeholders. And this slide shows a couple of options for this, one from BC and one from Toronto. The slide on the left is from ICBC's Interactive Crash Maps. So this is an online tool for BC municipalities that enables you to generate maps for crashes at intersections. And you can specify if you just want to look at pedestrian or cyclist crashes. And you can customize them by city and by year. So it'll do the work for you. This particular slide is a map of all the crashes involving pedestrians in 2008 and 2012. So note, this is only crashes that involve motor vehicles and where there were claims, but it'll give you a good assessment of where those kinds of crashes happen. Maps can also be used to present different types of data in ways that are accessible to a range of audiences. So on the right, I show an example from the Diabetes in Toronto Atlas. This was produced by the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences in Toronto, which used GIS to map diabetes rates overlaid with a whole host of data from census to CCHS, CIHI, and other local sources. And this particular map shows the relationship between diabetes rates and neighborhood activity friendliness. So maps can be relatively easy to make, such as ICBC's interactive tools that you can download and include in a report or a presentation. Or they can be more complex using GIS and requiring in-house capacity or an external consultant to do. But in any case, they can be very rich ways to communicate these linkages and get people thinking and paying attention to the links between health and transportation. Slide 26, this is a promising practice that I'll highlight for sort of tier two or tier three cities, those that are ready to move forward toward health impact assessment or cost-benefit analysis. So one online tool that's available is the Health Economic Assessment Tool. This is developed by the World Health Organization. And this tool quantifies the economic value of the health-related benefit from a given level of walking or cycling. And there's two tools, one of them's for cycling and one of them's for walking. And what it does is it says it's a health-related impact. So you can use these to model the results of changes to a built environment, for example, if you implement a new policy or you're building new infrastructure, or to assess what the current levels, what the health benefit is associated with the current levels. So this was used in a recent project in Toronto, shown here. It's also been used in Ottawa as well and a number of other places across Canada. So it's starting to be used more widely. It is, has been used heavily across Europe. So there are limitations to this tool. The HEAT currently only models health impacts related to mortality, not morbidity, and of course it's reliant on the validity of input parameters. It's probably most useful for estimations that might be at municipal or regional levels versus very small scale segment level assessments, but these limitations notwithstanding, it's readily available and it can assess municipalities in taking the next step forward themselves to integrate health into transportation planning at little cost. So there's frequent training programs available, and the kinds of inputs that you need are inputs that are typically available through origin and destination surveys. So to wrap up, this project really uncovered a lot of complexity. So we saw that there were really large differences in the amount of data that municipalities collect from those in Tier 1 to those in Tier 3. Some have collect and have access to a lot of data, and others have only really basic traffic information right now. But they want to know what they should measure to get meaningful data and move forward. Finally, there were also municipalities that simply did not have the capacity or the interest to collect any active transportation data. And across all the settings we talked to, there were different viewpoints on the need for health at the table in transportation planning. So some places were positive about it, and other places were not sure what the role was still. So in recognition of these differences, that's why we really developed this tiered approach to link specific needs to appropriate recommendations for people at whatever stage they were at. The project identified a number of opportunities, some of which were low-hanging fruit. So for instance, there were municipalities that weren't aware of the data being collected in the health sector, and public health staff who currently didn't have access to the transportation data. So making those linkages. And so some of the needs that arose can be met by sharing those data sources and connecting municipalities with existing sources of information. So that report that we've generated has a number of pertinent links to those people working in the BC context, at least. It also identified a number of new regional initiatives that look very promising, the My Health, My Community survey, TransLink's regional cycling strategy, which speaks to having one repository for data, and a panel survey that's being initiated by the City of Vancouver. So some of these municipalities are going out and collecting their own data and moving this program forward. But just to point out a number of challenges, I'll take a few minutes to mention a couple here. One is the geographic level at which data is available or representative. So transportation data is often collected within municipalities, but health data is often available at the health region level or maybe the local health area. And these might be larger areas than the municipality itself. But in some cases, the health authorities or health research organizations can assist municipalities in obtaining health data at municipal levels where the sample sizes are large enough. Second, while the planning and transportation sectors may work closely within a given municipality in some cases, regionally the responsibilities sit in different agencies, so Metro Vancouver and TransLink, and then health is a separate entity from both. This kind of landscape might not facilitate consistent approaches to integrating health and transportation sectors, but there are initiatives locally and there probably are across the country, such as here we have the Healthy Built Environment Alliance, or the City of Vancouver has a healthy city strategy that's working to reduce these barriers and have a more seamless process. In terms of technology, municipalities have invested in different technologies for automated count programs, some using inductive loops, infrared counters, video cameras, and each method comes with its own strengths and limitations, but the different methods may mean that the data is not comparable right now. And then finally, to note that a lot of the needs mentioned by municipalities or the authorities and other people we interviewed were not about having more or better data. So some municipalities said that their top priority was simply having better transit service, and that's something that I heard in the rural setting as well. Another challenge was that another municipality was challenged in that changes in policy meant that police are no longer required to attend all crashes that happen, and so this has a lot of impacts on data completeness and consistency. And finally, one thing that was really mentioned across the board was the need for a champion. So needing a champion in the organization or the jurisdiction to get political backing and increased capacity for this type of work. So thanks so much for your attention as I've been talking across the country. The link to the report is available on this slide at the bottom. And I hope you'll download the report for more detailed direct links and more information about these promising practices and others. My hope to hear from you in the discussion time is about your challenges and successes or to help us identify further promising practices from your areas or that you may know of interest. Thank you.
Excellent presentation. Thank you.
We'll go into questions right away. I'll put one forward to Megan. Just, do you have a sense of how the data availability might vary from one province to another?
I can say that, you know, I don't even know if it's from one province to another or if it's from one jurisdiction to another. And that is what I hear. So, I mean, at a provincial level, at a health region level, the health regions don't actually have... Health authorities here don't even have the same access to types of data, but health authorities have similar access to data. But what I heard in our interviews anyways was that there was a lot of variability within smaller levels, so within municipalities even, or between municipalities.
There are a couple questions coming in. Here's, what does the Peel Data Center have available?
I think it's a whole set of transportation and health data. So it disseminates GIS data and tabular data and census data. So some things that the municipalities told us that they wanted was, you know, the census data is out there, but if somebody could compile it into reports and make it easily accessible for them, then those municipalities that have less capacity for time finding and downloading data could have that in place. And so just quick links to those kinds of tools. And I think the Peel Data Center regularly updates its health and transportation data that it keeps on its clearinghouse. I will say that there's also a number of open data initiatives across the country. Some municipalities are really leading this. Edmonton, Vancouver has a pretty good one. Toronto has a fantastic one. And often these are these might have good coverage in terms of GIS data and often census data. But they don't typically have health data involved in them.
Okay. Peel Data Center, does it cover municipalities all over Canada?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It takes care of data for its region. And so we put it in as a promising practice just to highlight that there were centers doing this in Canada, and so it might be a model for something that you'd want to do in your own regional area. To cover off for data like that. There's also a fantastic one for LA. I didn't think it was relevant here because most Canadian cities would not think they were comparable to LA, but they have a fantastic data center in LA as well.
There's a question from the folks in Metro Vancouver. They're saying, thanks, Megan. Can you speak to the difference between HEAT and HIA? Is HEAT just HIA with economic analysis?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we'll hear more about the health impact assessment that the City of Montreal or that the researchers in Montreal have been doing in the second stage. So the health economic assessment tool from the WHO is a model of the physical activity benefits associated related to mortality that are associated with walking and cycling levels. Typically, a health impact assessment would have more components to it than that. So again, this is just about physical activity benefits and just from walking and cycling trips. Whereas a health impact assessment, you know, first of all, that's one term that covers a whole host of different procedures. They can be qualitative, descriptive, shorter, or they can be, you know, 6 months or a year-long contract. But they may include other factors. For instance, who particularly, which areas are affected or which segments of the population are most affected, and they'd likely consider, you know, injuries, air pollution, and physical activity. I think we'll hear that again going forward.
Excellent. Thanks. As Sue Chikazi is saying, get a set of active transportation counts in Haliburton and Minden, they're in Ontario, using a protocol based on the ALTA planning projects approach. We did about 10 locations in each village using volunteers. And Sue, if you can post, is there an online link that information would be available?
I think Sue's referring to the U.S. National Counts program that the link is to in the presentation. And so that was developed in partnership with ALTA Planning, and they set that protocol out. Sue can confirm if that's right.
Because yes.
So that's the link that was here. And I think that's a great example of a rural community capitalizing on this kind of practice.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks, Megan. So over to Audrey and Celine.
So the first thing that I would like to say is, yes, what I'm going to describe is methods to link health and transportation. So I'm going to present methods to assess impacts of various transportation scenarios. And in order to do that, we're a team. I'm just a spokesperson here today for a team of engineers and public health practitioners. So I want to stress at first that Céline Plante and Louis-François Tétrault prepared the slides. So they put a lot of time and thinking into doing this. So I'd like to acknowledge them. The second thing that I'd like to mention is that because we're collaborating with Mariana Zupulu and Naveen Eluru, two engineers from McGill, we are able to do our health impact assessment. And here, I want to stress the fact that the collaboration between engineers and public health practitioners is crucial. The other thing that I'd like to mention is, as I said, I'm just a spokesperson here today. Patrick Morancy is responsible for the traumas component of our project, and there's a lot of other colleagues involved. So I really want people to understand that I'm just a spokesperson here today, because there's a lot of work involved in what I'm going to present. Okay, I'm on slide number 4, pathways for transport impact on human populations. So I'm going to talk about methods to assess health impacts of transportation systems. There are various ways in which transportation system can impact our health through air pollution and noise emissions. Traffic flows will be associated with road traffic injuries. I'm trying to get the little arrow to follow my speech, but whatever, I missed it. Anyways, other impacts of our transport system are associated with actually our other gains of our transportation system are associated with the active transportation. So there are gains like reduction of diabetes, of mortality, of obesity that are associated with active transportation. So this is a general framework for presenting how our transport system can have various impacts on our health. So I'm on to the next slide, presenting to you in red what we in Montreal are planning on doing. So we are not assessing the impacts of our transportation system on all possible health endpoints, but we are covering a large number of them. We're actually covering the health impacts of air pollution and traffic flows on injuries, and we're covering also the gains associated with active transportation. And so we're the area of our study. I'm on the map on slide 6 is the Greater Montreal region. It's actually a little smaller than what you are able to see. I mean, you see a larger area than what we're studying. We're not studying the upper northwest part of the map, but most of it is under study. There's about 100 municipalities that we're studying. How do we assess the health impacts and gains of our transportation system? We're using a framework and a tool that we've adapted that has been that's been made available by Woodcock and colleague. Their tool is called the Integrated Transport and Health Impact Modeling Tool. And the slide here, slide number 7, presents the outline of our methodology. And my goal today is to go step by step with you into the methods to explain to you how can we assess health impacts and gains of our transportation system. So basically what you see completely to the right are the impacts, the health impacts or benefits of our transportation system. So you have, and there are a couple of typos and I will mention them as I go, but there will be a new presentation that will be posted on the website with corrections. So for example, we're not going to address cancer associated with air pollution, but we're going to assess the health impacts, the respiratory and cardiovascular mortality and incidence of asthma associated with air pollution from traffic emissions. We're going to look at road traffic injuries associated with our transportation system, and we're going to look at health benefits, like in terms of mortality, in terms of diabetes and cancer that are associated with active transportation. Now, how will we do that? We're using exposure response functions. What are exposure response functions? They're a relation between an exposure and a health outcome. So the health outcome being the last the last columns that you see to the right in my slide. So we relate exposure, for example, exposure to air pollutants, to mortality, using the risk functions from the literature. So we use risk functions from the literature basically for most of the outcomes that are listed here. And the exposures are estimated using various models, transport model, multi-choice model. And as I said, I'll go into details with you, but basically what we do is, for example, we estimate the kilometer traveled in various municipalities, and we're using these kilometer traveled are estimated from a traffic assignment model that is estimated with the origin destination survey. And for the origin destination survey is also used to calculate what we call METs, or the energy or the metabolic equivalent, stands for active transportation. So this is the framework that we follow, and as I said, I'll explain to you the various steps to calculate health impacts of various transportation scenarios. So on this slide here, we're presenting how we would calculate the actual situation of the impacts of our actual transportation system using the origin destination data survey of 2008. And on the next slide, slide nine, you have the scenarios of transport and urban development scenarios that will modify, like there will be modifications in kilometer travels and air pollution associated with changes in our transport system, and we're modeling these changes to assess the impacts or gains associated with our transportation scenarios. Okay, next slide. I'm going slowly into the details with you. So now just quickly to make sure that everybody follows me. Baseline is in 2008. Then we have various future scenarios. We have a future scenario which is called the business as usual scenario, where the transportation system remains the same in the future, but the population changes. So we have more people in the future in 2031 in Montreal. And we also have other future scenarios where not only do the population change, but we also have changes in public transit or in road infrastructures, and we also plan on having financial incentive scenarios and other scenarios associated with CO2 reduction of emissions. So I want to say that these scenarios, we still have to agree on the future scenarios. So we're at the step where we're almost ready to calculate the baseline impacts, and we have to decide on the future scenarios now, talking about our team. So, okay. I just want to go back a minute just to make sure that everybody follows me. So, number one here, the impacts or gains of air pollution associated with our transport scenario. This is what I'm going to talk about. Secondly, I'll talk about the impacts of our transportation system on road traffic injury, and at last, I'll talk about the benefits of active transportation. So, air pollution impacts associated with our transportation system. What do we need to do that? We need to model their pollutant levels associated with transport emissions. And I'll tell you how we do that. As I mentioned earlier, we need relations between pollutant levels and health effects. So we're talking about relations between nitrogen oxide and all-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality, and incidence of asthma in children. And what we're doing is we're calculating by municipality. You remember we have about 100 municipalities. We're calculating the number of cases that are attributable to a business-as-usual scenario in the future compared to our baseline, or we're comparing attributable cases of future scenarios compared to our business-as-usual scenario in the future. Now, for the concentration of air pollutants, as I mentioned earlier, we have a great collaboration with engineers. Marianne Adzopoulou and her colleagues are modeling concentration of nitrogen oxides in Montreal, on the Greater Montreal region, using the traffic flows that are estimated from a traffic assignment model using origin destination data. And with these traffic flows and an emission model and a dispersion model, air pollutant concentrations are estimated on a small geographic scale. So this is what we're using as exposure levels to estimate the impacts of air pollution in Montreal. Now, so just quickly here, these are the emissions. We're still calculating the air pollutant concentrations of nitrogen oxide on the Greater Montreal area, but this is just to show you the emissions of NOx on our study area. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we're using response functions from the literature. Response functions, exposure response functions, are relations that relate the change in health outcome with the change in the exposure, in this case, nitrogen oxides. And we're looking at all-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality, and incidence of asthma. And here you have the references where we're taking the relations from. Okay. I know it's getting complicated, but again, as I said, my goal today is really to take you by the hand and explain to you how we're calculating health impacts. So basically what we're doing here on this slide, I'm showing you how we're calculating the changes in health impacts for a given municipality for a future scenario. So, for example, a future scenario where there would be a lot of public transit. So what we have, we're multiplicating the population impact fraction by, say we're looking at mortality in this case, so by the baseline rate of mortality in our area by the future population for this area. And so what it gives us, for example, we have a rate of death in our area, and given the future population, we thus expect a certain number of people dying, but how many of these are caused by transport emissions? So how many of these, the fraction of these that are caused by air pollution, we're calculating thanks to this population impact fraction. And how do we calculate this population impact fraction? This is what is expressed below. We're basically calculating the first component of this equation represent the risks for our business as usual scenario, to which we remove the risk for the scenario with a lot of public transport and dividing it by the same element, the risk for our future scenario with a lot of public transport, for example. And so basically these components, the RR, represent the relative risks or the slope or the indicator of the association that comes from our response functions that I presented above from the literature, and we need an estimate of exposure of our population. So we're doing it at a really small scale, geographic scale in our case. We're estimating the exposure of each individual on the island of Montreal and estimating the risk associated with these exposure for our various scenarios. So there's more detail on this slide and I will not go through it, but for those interested, I explain here how we, future population, how we're going to estimate our future population, what are the base rates and so on. Okay, now for road traffic injuries, we the method is a bit different. We're using kilometer traveled by vehicles, and we're also using transport-related kilometer traveled by pedestrians. So here it includes people traveling by foot, pedestrians, but also people taking public transits and walking to the bus stop or to the subway, for example. So the kilometer traveled by pedestrians also include those associated with trips to the bus stops and subways. We will be using road types like major arteries or secondary road as proxy of road geometry. And again, what we're doing is we're calculating changes in the number of injuries. So now I bring you to the left, injuries for motor vehicle occupants or injuries for pedestrians. So we're calculating the changes in the number of injuries by municipality. Again, for the business as usual future scenario compared to baseline in 2008, or for the future scenarios, for example, a scenario with a lot of public transit compared to the business as usual scenario. There's a little star here to mention that we may also, if there's enough cyclists, we may also include the cyclists in our calculation. Okay, next slide. I'm on slide 16. I'm on road traffic injuries, and I'm going to explain that one of the first steps is to calculate injury rates at baseline. So how do we do that? We have the number of injuries of motor vehicle occupant per vehicle kilometer travel. This is what we call our injury rate at baseline. And then we've got the same for pedestrian, except that in this case, and here this is one of the mistakes that we have to remove, the little star should not be there. So we've got the number of injured pedestrians per kilometer travel in the, in an area per vehicle kilometer traveled. So for the rates for pedestrians, we have the kilometer traveled while walking in a municipality, as well as the kilometer traveled on the road network by vehicles. We're using various health databases. We're using the police reports and the hospitalization data to obtain the injuries, and one of them gives us the location of the accident, while the other database, the hospitalization database, does not give us the location where the injury occurred, but it gives us the location of residence of the person injured. And on the next slide, I explain on slide 17 that we're actually calculating risk of injuries for two perspectives. We're going to calculate the risk based on the municipality of occurrence. If I live in a suburb and I take my car a lot, am I more likely to have an accident? And we're going to calculate risks, by municipality of residence is perspective two. And we're going to calculate by municipality of occurrence. So if I walk or take my car in an area downtown Montreal, am I more likely in this area to be injured? So we're interested by the two perspectives. So for the perspective of injury rates by municipality of occurrence, so we're using the number of injuries in the municipality, which is divided by the vehicle kilometer traveled in that municipality, and while for the other perspective, it's the opposite, the number of injured people from a municipality divided by the vehicle kilometer traveled by the residents of this municipality. Okay, now how do we calculate the changes in injuries associated with the future scenarios? I'm on slide 18, and this slide, again, I'll take your hand here, and there's a few little mistakes that I want to point out. The little star here should not be here. There should be a little J besides each scenario. Okay. So we're going to calculate the number of injured motor vehicle occupant according to various scenarios, the business as usual or these other scenarios like with a lot of public transit offer. So we're going to calculate this number of injured people using the injury rate for the baseline that I presented to you in the slide, the preceding slide, and we're multiplying this rate by an exponent that is, or an attenuation of the, we're kind of like using an exponent from another relation from the literature or from our own data to reduce this injury rate given a certain number of vehicle kilometer traveled associated with our scenario. And it's the same thing for the pedestrian injury. We're obtaining the number of injured pedestrian for a given scenario using the injury rate at baseline that I presented in the previous slide, multiplying this injury rate by attenuation factors, if I can call them this way, that come from various studies or from our own data relating the kilometer traveled or the kilometer walked to the rates of injuries. Okay, and now how will we calculate the changes for our future scenarios? So for example, the changes of injured people given a scenario with a lot of public transit compared to the business as usual scenario, we're just subtracting the number of injured people for a given scenario. We're reducing this with the number of injured people from the business as usual scenario. So again, there are a few more details that I could provide, but I will, if people have questions later, I can answer them. Okay, now the last component that we're assessing is the benefits of physical activity. So here we're using exposure response functions from the literature that relate METs, or the energy or the metabolic equivalent. So these functions relate the METs to a health outcome like all-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality, diabetes, breast cancer. So we're using risk functions, relative risks from the literature, and we're also using the metabolic equivalent, stands for active transport, and in these risk functions, it's the myth associated with all activities that is used. So we do have to estimate also in our calculation non-transport related physical activity in myth. And I will explain to you how we will do that as well. And so again here what we're doing is we're calculating the number of cases attributable to the business as usual scenario compared to the baseline, or to future scenarios compared to the baseline as the business as usual scenario. Now I'm on slide 20, the risk functions that we're going to use for the component on benefits of physical activity. So we're using various risk functions from the literature for all-cause mortality, cardiovascular mortality, diabetes, breast cancer, and maybe other health outcomes that we're also going to address. And we're using risk functions for people age 18 years and older. I'm on slide 21, and here I'm going to give a few details on metabolic equivalence, span for active transport. So these, and I mentioned this earlier, are going to be estimated using the mean distances walked at baseline from the origin destination survey in 2008. That include transit walking distances, so distances walked going, for example, to a bus stop. And we're going to do that not only for the baseline, but also for our future scenarios. And then we're using, from the literature, walking speeds to estimate the time spent walking, because this is what we need to convert, to obtain METs, or metabolic equivalents, using the Ensworth and colleagues approach. And as I mentioned earlier, the risk functions relating metabolic equivalence to health outcomes like mortality or diabetes also include all type of physical activity that are not transport related. So we do have to include this in our assessment. And in order to calculate that, we're going to use information from a survey in Montreal, the TOPO survey, and we're going to attribute a baseline non-transport related physical activity per area by age and sex. Okay, I will not get into the details of slide 22 on the methods to calculate the METs, but the information is there, and if people have questions, I can answer them afterwards. Now, again, just as what we're doing for air pollution, we're calculating changes of in health benefits, gains in health associated with the future scenarios for a given municipality. So for example, here we're calculated the number of cases that would be reduced given a scenario with a lot of transport, public transport, for example, compared to the business as usual scenario. And here again, what we have the baseline rate, for example, mortality in the project population in the future, and then we have a population impact fraction that we have to calculate. And how we calculate this population impact fraction, we calculate it multiplying the exposure of our population by the risks for the exposure for the business as usual scenario, by the relative risk that are from the literature. We do that for the business as usual scenario. We do that for another scenario, like a scenario with a lot of public transport, dividing it by the same component to obtain the population impact fraction. So the fraction of people dying that would be saved given our scenario. Okay, on the next slide here, just
24 for people who are on telephone only.
I just want here to mention a few words about the mode choice model. So, and I will go back to one of the first slides really quickly to have you follow me here. So I am on slide number 8, the framework for conducting an integrated health impact assessment. And what you have here is that if we have a scenario where we add public transit, that means that people may take the public transit instead of their car. If they do, there's a mode choice. So we have a mode choice model that will make that will modify the number of people that were taking their car, for example, or the number of people that would walk. And because with this mode choice, we can simulate how many fewer cars in the location we may have if we have public transit. So what is the mode choice model really quickly? And now I'm going back to one of the last slides that I was presenting, slide 24. So the mode choice model is a model that it's a statistical model that predicts if you will take a mode or another, if you'll take your car, if you will walk, and what explains if you take your car, if you walk, it may be your sex, it may be your age, it may be your health condition, but it may also be the presence of a subway beside your place or a bus stop beside your place, the time that you would take to reach the downtown, taking the public transit, and so on. So it's the model that predicts your mode choice based on a number of characteristics. And this model allows us to estimate how many people in the future would be taking their car, what would be the traffic flows on various segments of the island of Montreal, for example. So, and this model is being developed by Dr. Ellerou at McGill University. So now, in the end, my last slide here presents to you what we're going to obtain as a deliverable, if we can speak this way. We're going to have for each municipality the impact, the deaths that are attributable to air pollution, the injuries that are attributable to the traffic flows in various municipalities, so and the gains of active transportation for the various municipality at for the business as usual compared to the baseline scenarios, or for our various future transportation scenario compared to the business as usual. And yes, as you can see, it's quite complex, and I'm happy to answer the questions now. Thank you.
Excellent. Audrey, do you have any result for Laval?
Actually, we will. I mean, Laval is part of our study area, and we will actually take contact with the various municipalities involved.
From the city of Ottawa, how do you factor in the seasonal variation, for example, fewer cyclists in the winter?
Oh, excellent question. Yes, of course, the if we include the cyclist, it will have to be performed only for a specific period of the year, which is the period when there's no snow.
Great, thank you. Would inclusion of PM data change estimates of health impacts?
We're using nitrogen oxides. If we would be using the PM, PM is a regional pollutant, less associated with intra-urban variation of air pollutants because it's more homogeneous over a urban area. No, I don't think that it would be necessarily an interesting addition.
Okay, there you go. There's a nice posting from Janet who's saying, we're doing some preliminary work to show where problems and with local infrastructure has resulted in the need for hazard busing. The school boards and the local municipalities are just beginning to have a mutual dialogue on active transportation here in Simcoe County, Ontario. Thanks very much, everybody, for posting those. Some interesting work in the U.S. on costs associated with hazard busing, or looking at the extra costs of having to run school buses be it to get children to schools further away, or in their cases, to schools in neighborhoods where walking wasn't safe. So they've used these cost estimates in their advocacy for school closings or neighborhood improvements. So just a posting there.
Hi, this is Kib. I'm going to just interject here. First of all, Audrey, thank you very much. That was excellent. I'm just wondering, again, I think you did say this, but maybe you could remind all of us, in terms of the scenarios, how fine a scale are you looking at? So I think there's a rich amount of data that you can kind of produce with this. Are you looking at being able to do that at a neighborhood level or a street level or kind of more of a larger subdivision level?
Well, this is an excellent question, and I think that it pertains also to the originality. It points out to the originality of our project. We are going to have scenarios that will be on a really fine scale. Say I add a bus line on this road, or I add a subway station in this area. It's going to be as fine as this, but the final calculation of health impacts and gains will be at the municipality level.
And then, just again, you may have said this, but you kind of covered a lot of material. When you were talking about the injuries, predicting the kind of the coefficients for the injury rates, were you actually going to try and build into there like different road types and kind of cycling infrastructure? Was that going to be kind of reflected in the coefficients?
Well, I did not explain all this, so I did not cover that, Kim. Thanks, though. For the cyclists, I would rather not say much because we haven't decided yet how we're going to move ahead. Now, we are going to use our own data to estimate these coefficients. I don't know if I answer here your question or not, or if I'm beside your question.
And maybe just to kind of go back to some of the comments that were being made that Dorothy was kind of, Dot was reading out. So could somebody use a health impact assessment tool such as this for questions like those being posed by some of our participants today? People were saying things like, so if we close a hospital and now people have to be, have to travel further, are those the kinds of questions or scenarios that could actually be put into a model such as this?
Well, the methods are the same and could be used for sure, but I mean, here what we're hoping to do is to address the issue on a large scale because often there's little integration, and we believe that integrating all the possible scenarios, the transit system, the road system, all together would provide a better picture of what are the impacts of our transportation system. But yes, the same method can be used on a local scale to look at the impact of buses in an area, or yes, for sure.
Thank you.
Could you go into the OD survey? Who's being surveyed and how is it done?
Okay, the OD survey, the origin destination survey, the methodology is similar across most cities, I believe, in Canada and even in Europe and elsewhere. These surveys are population-based surveys. They are done on a given day of the fall, so and they address, they ask people to explain what are the routes that they followed to get to their final destination on a given day. So what are the various routes, trips that they took on a given day?
Excellent, thank you. From Deanna out in Manitoba, is the municipality involved in this project? If not, have they expressed interest in using the data?
There's great interest by the metropolitan community. They would like us to present our work, and we're hoping to influence some of the decisions that are being made with our results. We have met with some stakeholders to discuss the various scenarios that we want to model.
We've got two more questions. One from York Region Public Health. How did you assess the applicability of concentration response functions from the literature to your population?
We're using meta-analysis. We decided to do that, although if we have, and this is the case for asthma incidents, if we have better risk functions that are most appropriate for our location, we're using them.
Great, thank you. who conducts and collects the OD survey data?
There's the Metropolitan Agency for Transportation in Montreal, and it's being done in collaboration with various other stakeholders.
Okay.
There's a comment about PM. Yes, if we're talking about PM 2.5, I don't think that there is much variation. And I remember myself making measurements along the Highway 40 in Montreal and right beside it and farther away, and there was no variation in PM 2.5 from a background location and beside the highway. However, ultrafine particles, of course, would vary. And the risk functions that are related to cardiovascular mortality are for PM 2.5, which I believe do not very much geographically. So that's just for Richard, who commented on local PM levels along major highways.
Excellent. Thank you. Slide number 28.
So folks, we just want to get a sense of who's on the phone, whether or not your public health professionals, planning, transportation professionals, or some other groups. So that just helps us to get a sense of who you are and kind of what your interests are.
So we've got lots of public health folks, planning professionals, and a few folks in non-government NGOs and academic researchers. On to slide 29.
And again, we'll just for a minute, we'll just put this here. What actions will you take as a result of your involvement in this fireside chat? Do you consider, will you share the information with colleagues, use it to inform your work? We just want to get a sense from people if, you know, again, just a very kind of informal project evaluation form here, just trying to get a sense of how people see this information being useful to them.
Lots of folks are going to say share info with colleagues and TIDE for use the information to inform their work. Next big one is to use information to support relationships with professionals from other sectors.
Excellent. And then we'll just go on to the very last slide here. I just want to thank Megan and for Audrey for two excellent presentations. I think they were incredibly useful and interesting for all of us. And just like to point out once again that Healthy Canada by Design, we do have a hub website where we have been posting reports such as those that the one that was done by Simon Fraser. And we would encourage you to subscribe to our newsletter and follow us on Twitter. And otherwise, just thank you very much for participating.
If you had one last thought you'd like to leave with our participants, what would that be? So maybe we'll start with Megan and then over to Audrey and Cillian.
I guess my hope is that you find yourself on the continuum, especially for the smaller cities who might have been on the phone here, that they don't feel overwhelmed and that they find some way to just take that next step. So there was a lot of comments from Ontario. Do we have crash maps? How can we get these? So if that's what you think the gap is, then I hope that you can find a promising practice and hold that up as an example from elsewhere.
Excellent. Thank you. And then over to Audrey and Cillian.
Wish list would be, I think, that all Canadian cities team up to assess health impacts of actual transportation systems. And I think that we have the methods and the data can be gathered to do that, hopefully.
Great, thank you. Cillian, did you want to add anything?
Maybe just add that if presentation could help other people to do the same, that's what we wanted.